Hey everybody, welcome to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. I'm your host, Brenton Bickerstaff, and this week on the show we have Grace Yuksik. Grace was born in New York City, where she grew up in the midst of the arts. Her diverse achievements include majoring in music at the famed LaGuardia School of the Arts and obtaining a Bachelor of Science degree in Sociology from the University of New York. She is a dedicated researcher of the Cayce material for over 35 years and is an ARE tour leader. Grace has become a leading authority on the prehistoric Egyptian civilization. She is a popular and sought-after speaker, and she is a frequent lecturer throughout the United States. She is known for her charismatic personality and her ability to enable audiences to imagine and really feel the Cayce material come to life. Grace brings a wealth of knowledge and spiritual understanding to her presentations. Her passion for studying ancient civilizations has taken her to Egypt many times. And she is a featured presenter at the coming up 82nd Annual ARE Congress. And the title of this Congress this year is Building a New World from the Inside Out, Living Christ Consciousness. And this is in Virginia Beach from June 16th through the 21st. Here's my interview with Grace. I want to thank you for coming on the show today.
I want to thank you for having me.
Of course. Now, Grace, the floor is all yours because I understand you have some amazing information to tell us about an upcoming presentation that you're going to be having.
I will be speaking at the 82nd Annual ARE Congress this year, and that's going to take place on June 16th through the 21st. The theme for Congress this year is Building a New World from the Inside Out, Living the Christ Consciousness. And this is a very important topic for this time because we are moving in an ascent where there's a lot of soul evolution going on. And it's important to know that much was put in place, according to the Cayce material, for this evolution to take place, this spiritual evolution. And it's been put in place over time. And I will be speaking about this, and my topic is Awakening to Christ Consciousness, Preparation for Spiritual Evolution in Atlantis, Egypt, and Palestine. It's a rather detailed and complex topic, but I will try to give you an overview of what I will be covering. But before I do, I'd like to point out that in 1931, Edgar Cayce gave his first reading on an annual members' congress. And then each year after that, there was held a Congress, and all members and representatives were invited to attend, and they reported on numerous things from various portions of the country, as well as speakers that presented material based on the Cayce readings, which renewed their faith, their confidence, their purposes, their aims, and the work itself. This is a great thing that has happened since then. There has been a Congress every year, and the original purposes of Congress still remain in the week of Congress. There is fellowship, there is communication, there's education, inspiration, celebration, and most of all, and most importantly, the interaction that takes place between the members, the staff, the board of trustees, etc. I would invite all new members of the ARE, folks who are working with the Search for God material and Search for God study groups, to come to Congress this year because this is a very, very important topic that is being covered. It has everything to do with what they're working and striving for. The new members can interact with the old members, those who have been involved in research, who are truth seekers, who have a great deal to share with them, who can help them on their path. And, of course, those who are working with the transformational material of the Search for God material can actually gain the background and all the information on what was put in place for their evolution at this time. It's going to be a fabulous Congress, and I invite so many to attend. With regards to my talk, I would like to say that the Christ consciousness is that first spoken of in the beginning when God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And that is the light manifested in the Christ. The Christ consciousness first became physically conscious in Adam. And as Adam, we all die. And in the last Adam, Jesus, we become alive. Now, what is it that I'm saying? I'm saying that the Christ entered into materiality and took responsibility for us as souls who entered and co-created out of harmony with God in the earth. And therefore, we need to evolve out of everything that we created that is not harmonious with the will of God. And the Christ had to enter into materiality, first as Adam, and in its last incarnation as the man Jesus. I will be talking about those incarnations as well. The Christ consciousness, by definition, in the KC readings, is the Christ consciousness is the awareness within each soul, imprinted in pattern on the mind, and waiting to be awakened by the will of the soul's oneness with God. And that is written just like that in reading 5449-14. So all of us were given the gift of the free will that we might learn to use it and eventually become companions and co-creators with God. But there has to come a point when we surrender that will that we have and make it one with the will of God. And that is a process. And that also requires that we desire to do so. Our journey is not complete without getting to that level. And so we will be talking about everything that has been put in place to make us aware, to prepare us, and to get us to where we are today so that we can eventually surrender our will to the will of God and become what we were intended to be, companions and co-creators with our Creator. Our journey begins in the ancient civilization of Lemuria, which appeared, according to the Casey material, in the Pacific coast. Souls, spirits, entered into that part of the world, and they did lots of things. This, in the readings, is called the first influx of souls that entered into materiality. And like them, the second influx of souls entered into what we call Atlantis, and it's not a mythical place. According to Edgar Cayce, Atlantis really existed. And the relative location, the readings say, was the eastern seaboard of the United States, which comprised the western lowlands of Atlantis. Then it also says in another reading that it extended southward into the Gulf of Mexico and as far as the Mediterranean Sea. And it goes on to say that the island of Bimini off the coast of Florida was a part of the massive continent, as were the Bahamas. So when we read about Atlantis, we think, oh, it was just a story that Plato wrote about or told about, but no, Casey says that souls began to descend into Atlantis. And when they did that, although they had been forewarned not to abandon their celestial links, or they might be lost in the realm of the earth, some got caught up in the plants and the animals, and their thoughts created new material forms from the elements of the earth, as did the first influx of souls in Lemuria prior to them. This caused the souls to become trapped in grotesque forms that were unable to manifest, and they were unable to manifest their spiritual connection to God. They became trapped and were now lost in the earth. This was a very sad thing because, you know, God didn't create us so that we would be lost. God is very patient and loves us and wants us to fulfill our destiny. And so began our story and our journey of evolution in the earth.
And we'll be right back with more from Grace Yuksek here on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. And welcome back to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We'll get right back into my interview with Grace Yuksek.
Amelius, the Christ soul, projected himself into the earth and led all the souls through so that we could begin to evolve out of what we created out of harmony. The Atlanteans, of course, began to separate physically, becoming two separate sexes, and this brought great divisions among the Atlanteans, but I guess I need to tell those who do not know that we were created androgynous, with both polarities, the masculine and the feminine, in one. And in the earth, we are spirit, mind, and body, physical body. And so the souls who were in spirit form then began to develop thought forms. They became more desirous of experiencing themselves in the flesh. But there were no bodies here for them. So they had to create bodies that would allow them to do this. Unfortunately, these were the imperfect, grotesque bodies. In order to get out of that condition, Amelius decided that it was necessary that a rescue mission be run, and this was the reason for which the Adamic body was created. The Adamic body is the body we occupy today. And of course, along with that, we needed to be given the teachings of the Law of One. We needed to understand that the Lord thy God is one and that we all come from the One. And oneness is the law that binds the universe, that one is the light, that we worship only the One, that all must return to the One, and that we must live as sons and daughters of God, children of the Law of One, attuned to the One God in the earth. This is most important, and this was given in Atlantis for the purpose of our evolution. The Adamic body was created by God. It was the last of the creations in the earth. This was not a place where our human souls were to be evolving. But it became necessary to reconnect with our source. So this new body that was created has energy centers through which we can raise the life force and reconnect with our source. This is very, very important because we needed guidance now. We needed to understand and remember who we are, for what purpose we were created, and why we need to work through all that we have created that is out of harmony with the will of God. And so the Adamic race appeared in the earth. And the readings say that at approximately 12,000 BC, five races, that which we know as the human race, appeared in the earth. Not to be confused with the five root races, but they appeared simultaneously in five different locations around the earth. The black race, the brown race, the red race, the white race, and the yellow race. and that each one develops most fully one of the five senses. Now, that is something that no one ever talks about. There is not one race more superior than the other. We're all part of the human race, and through our incarnations, it is encouraged that we choose to be all of them. And many of us have incarnated many, many times in the earth, and we continue our journey of evolution. But this all was put in place in Atlantis. In the sacred city of Eden in Poseidon, one of the cities of the island of Poseidon, which was part of Atlantis, is where the Adamic body was created. And this is where the androgynous soul of Amelius separated and the feminine aspect entered into the feminine portion of the new body and the masculine into the masculine portion, and they became Adam and Eve, one soul, or that which we call in the readings or identify in the readings as twin souls. Adam's fall from grace, of course, resulted from yielding to the carnal temptations of the flesh. And this is made very, very clear. Amelius first became aware he was to become the savior of the world when he fell in Eden. And the readings say, well, what exactly was the fall? Consorting with others for aggrandizing of self motives, which was apparently carnal involvement with the daughters of man. And we will talk more about that. That is very interesting. But he had everything to do with beginning this journey for us. There was then put the master plan in place for our salvation. You see, that created by the Creator is divine, and that created by the created is not. And Amelius, prior to becoming Adam, had created a mental form called Lilith to be his companion. But by doing this, he created a huge problem because he set the precedent for others to begin to use their mental imaging of themselves. And these souls were now in imperfect forms. They were projecting creatures that were inadequate, grotesque, and destined to become slaves, and later became what the Atlanteans called the things. So Amelius was wrong, and he realized he made this mistake. And of course, souls were entering into the earth by the hordes and getting trapped in these imperfect forms. So it became necessary to begin to purify the race by creating a new body in which souls could now reconnect with God and receive the guidance they needed for their evolution. But that's not the only place where all this preparation took place. Later, as the new generations came, in 10,500 BC, we have the entrance of the soul that was later Edgar Cayce entering into the earth, immaculately conceived by a daughter of Zu, which in the readings is identified as Carpathia, as a prophet and a seer, coming in with a dual purpose to purify the race of its imperfections and to unify the teachings of God in the earth. So he became the leader of the tribe of the people of Ararat, which is northern Turkey. So in 10,581, Rata had a prophetic vision, and he then led the people of Ararat into what we now call Egypt. He was a wonderful prophet and a seer, and he became their spiritual leader and prophet, and he began teaching the people about the spiritual nature of humanity. So as part of his work, once things settled down, he established temples of purification. He established three of them. And the work continued. He established the temples of sacrifice, which represented the physical body, and the temple beautiful, which represented the mind, and the temple of initiation, which the readings identify as the Great Pyramid, which represented the spirit. In the temple of sacrifice, cleansings took place. How? Well, there were surgeries, and they were removing animal portions, such as tails, feathers, scales, hoofs. And this was a voluntary program, mostly women, because they had to produce an offspring, and the idea was to manipulate the glands and to remove the appendages in order to be able to perfect the body, to make it more like the Adamic body. So in the earth, we had two bodies at this time. We had the bodies that were being perfected in the temples, and we had the Adamic race, which was in perfect form. And so, you know, the animal appendages were removed, and souls who were in these imperfect forms, and the myths exist, you know, and they're not myths. Casey said we did have mermaids, part human, part fish, centaurs, part human, part horse, satyrs, part human, part goat. You know, all of these existed. They were not myths. These were the bodies we created for ourselves. And of course, once these appendages were removed, the souls were given an ideal, and an ideal is set in spirit for the evolution of the soul. And we continue with that ideal through our many incarnations. Then in the temple beautiful, once these perfections took place, the souls entered in order to be trained and to develop their mental awareness, their spirituality. They were trained in vocational guidance as well. The Temple Beautiful was like a great university, and there individuals were taught that which had to do with the mind's unfoldment to the cosmic and to the spiritual laws. They purified in service.
And we'll be right back with more from Grace Yuksek here on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. And welcome back to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We'll get right back into my interview with Grace Yuksek.
And many of them remained working there in service of others. They were also trained in varied relationships of economic, social, commercial, material, and scientific application to the varied groups. The Temple Beautiful was a place of service and activity in which the trainings took place of individuals from the desires they were purifying from the desires of the natures of the flesh. And of course, they trained through music. There was training of the mothers for the new race. The initiates were trained there, the emissaries. The emissaries were not like missionaries of today. They actually went out and taught people how to connect directly with God, how to achieve that attunement for the purpose of being able to access guidance for their development and their evolution. And then, of course, we had the Temple of Initiation, and the Casey readings say that the Great Pyramid was the Temple of Initiation, and that it was completed during that period of Ra-Ta in 10,500 BC. It's a very interesting temple. Its purpose was to perfect the development of the spirit, a sacred mystical symbol and a complete record of historical, scientific, astronomical, astrological, numerological, and prophetic knowledge of the fourth root race, which is the Adamic race we're in today. So the Great Pyramid is full of prophecy. It's full of history. And it is a place that was used where the initiates entered to receive guidance as they attuned to the realm of the saints. And now I'll be telling more about that too. The preparation for spiritual evolution continued into Palestine after Egypt. You see, nothing ends, it just continues. This was then continued by a group called the Essenes. And the Essenes prepared the way for the coming of the Christ or the Messiah. They were the ones expecting this event. Thus, their name, Essene, means expectancy. They came about and they, as the outgrowth of the periods of preparations from the teachings of Melchizedek, and they continued by building a school, which was called the School of the Prophets, which existed for 300 years. The Essenes' purpose was to set themselves aside and to offer themselves to be in the direct line of choice for the coming of the Promised One, the Messiah. We know there were different groups of Essenes, but Casey tells us that this particular group of Essenes was situated at Mount Carmel, and that these were the ones that prepared the way for the Messiah. The Essenes studied astrology, numerology, reincarnation, phrenology, which is the study of character analysis related to configurations of the skull. Interesting. And they emphasized purity of body, purity of mind. They adhered to specific diets, and they actually communed with the universal forces as expressed in nature. They used intuition, and they practiced psychic development. And it was encouraged to those who joined the Essenes. They also gave attention to dreams, to visions, and to psychic experience. They accepted both Jews and Gentiles in their group. And men and women were treated equally, according to Edgar Casey. As a matter of fact, a woman named Judy was chosen as head of the Brotherhood at the time just preceding the entrance of the Messiah. She trained at the School of the Prophets and was a prophetess. Her reading number is 1472, for those who are interested. There was also another community on the northern coast of Jerusalem, possibly Qumran, and another woman named Eloise, who was also trained in the School of the Prophets, was in charge at that community. Her reading number is 1391. The Essenes knew from astrology and from observing the relation of Polaris to the southern clouds that this was now the beginning of a new cycle, the beginning of the Piscean Age. And this signaled to them the entrance of the Messiah. So 12 maidens were chosen to represent each of the tribes of Israel. And these little girls went through very, very strict training for a number of years. Mary, the mother of Jesus, who was also immaculately conceived, was one of the 12 maidens at Carmel. She was designated by an angel as the chosen one at the age of 12 on the temple steps at Carmel as she led the way. The maidens received very rigorous training as to physical exercise, mental exercises, chastity, purity, love, patience, endurance, All of these were part of their training, but they were also as tests for the physical and mental strength. And this was all under the supervision of those that cared for the nourishments by the protection in the food values. And absolutely no wine was allowed. Nothing fermented to drink was ever given to them. This was a very, very rigorous training. They had to remain very pure so that they could be of a very high vibration in order to bring in the Christ soul who was to be the Messiah. Mary's training was done at Carmel, and even after she was designated by the angel as the one who would be the mother, she continued to receive further specialized training in preparation for this event. A husband was selected for her because she was going to be pregnant very soon and without a husband. So Joseph, another member of the Essenes, at the age of 36, was told that he was to marry Mary at the age of, who was age 16, and so they were betrothed and married at Carmel. The birth of Jesus, many people think, oh my goodness, he was born, you know, in a very humble place, and they were all alone. No, they were not. This event was expected. It was prepared for. The Essenes were all over the place. They were making sure that it happened, that they were protected. And Mary and Joseph were assisted by the innkeeper and their daughter, who were also Essenes. And Mary and Joseph later focused on Jesus for the first 10 years and never had any children. But later, after 10 years, when Jesus had already been taught and trained by Mary, Joseph, and Judy at Carmel, they began their own family, and Jesus had other siblings. But Jesus' training was in the tenets of the brotherhood as well as in Mosaic law. And he was also trained in the ancient teachings of the East. And his training was in Persia, India, and in Egypt. Judy was his teacher. She was the head of the Essenes, and she bilocated. Judy determined where Jesus would travel to study. And during his teens, he first went to Persia, then to India, and finally to an Essene school in Egypt. Jesus remained in Egypt and was initiated in the Great Pyramid. He was initiated in the rites set by Ra-Ta in 10,500 BC and passed all of the initiation, becoming the Great Initiate. After that, he returned to Palestine, and John, you know, John the Baptist, who was his cousin, he had been initiated in Egypt as well, and he had come back to Palestine to prepare the way for Jesus. He baptized him, and then Jesus began his ministry. The Essenes continued during the time of Jesus.
And we'll be right back with more from Grace Yuksek here on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. And welcome back to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We'll get right back into my interview with Grace Yuksek.
...of Jesus. And though their purpose had already been fulfilled by the coming of the Master, the School of the Prophets remained as a school where one could come and study the tenets and practices of the Brotherhood and the teachings of the East. And then we have something very special, the life of the man Jesus, the quintessential pattern that he gave us for our preparation, for our evolution in the earth. The life of Jesus, of course, was complex, but It was a multifaceted portrayal of God at work through a perfected channel. His message to us through the life that he lived and the death that he died was to surrender to the Father's will. This was the message. This was the message he gave when he overcame, surrendering all power unto the power itself, surrendering all will unto the will of the Father, making of self then a channel for the blessings of God. This is, you know, just remarkable. And since the beginning, when we were granted the very first gift that would elevate us to the status of co-creators and God, the freedom of choice, we have been unwilling, resistant to use our free will constructively. The Casey reading suggests that the fundamental illness of mankind is the unwillingness to surrender ourselves to a higher will. The life of Jesus then demonstrates the true freedom that follows such an act of willing surrender. This is where we're headed, folks, and it continues to unfold. The readings further clarify that Jesus is the man, the activity, the mind, the relationships that he bore to others. And though he was mindful of friends, he was sociable, he was loving, he grew faint, he grew weak, and yet he gained that strength that he has promised in becoming the Christ by fulfilling and overcoming the world. We are made strong by the power in the Christ. The power then is the Christ. The pattern is in Jesus. So let us study his life and let us understand the pattern of perfection so that we too can awaken to Christ consciousness, that we too can put on the mind of Christ, that we too can evolve, that we can perfect our physical body, that we can perfect our minds, that we can become one with the will of our Creator and resurrect our bodies in the same manner that Jesus did. We have begun our ascent. We are all in the Adamic body. Time is moving on and we are moving through levels of consciousness quickly. We are working through our karmic patterns. We have the second coming to look forward to and the 100 and 1,000 years of peace, excuse me, which have been promised. And at some point, I am sure we will fulfill our destiny, which is to be one with our Maker, co-creators, companions, full companions, and gods for other worlds. All of this is fascinating and something that really requires our attention at this time. But I do encourage everyone to come and learn and study the Casey material. It is, it was given at this time for a very special reason. This period is a continuation of the period that began in Egypt during the time of Ra-Ta. And the soul that was Edgar Casey was Ra-Ta. And so these souls have been working on this material, putting everything in place for us over time. No one has given up on us except ourselves. So let's turn around. Let's examine this material. Let's awaken to the marks of Ra-Ta. We were marked in the name, on the body, and in the body, that we should recognize one another and be drawn to this work throughout the incarnations. So much has been given. Let us pay attention. Let us share this material with others. Let us help others. We are our brother's keepers. And we need to do this so that we can all bring peace and harmony into the world, bring the oneness of God into the earth. That's the dream and the reality that has to come.
Absolutely.
thank you for being a messenger for that. That's your message is amazing, and the way that you convey it is incredibly enlightening and impressive. So thank you so much for doing what you do, Grace.
You're very welcome, and thank you for having me on the show.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Well, that's all the time we have for the show this week. I'd like to thank my guest, Grace Yuksek, for sharing her incredibly inspiring knowledge on the history of Christ consciousness through Atlantis, Egypt, and Palestine, and how it applies to us today. If you'd like to hear more from Grace, make sure to check her out at the 82nd Annual ARE Congress in Virginia Beach, and this takes place from June 16th to the 21st. All are encouraged to join us at Congress this year for a traditional week of fellowship celebrating the legacy of Edgar Cayce, with workshops, lectures, special guest speakers, and social gatherings with like-minded people. To register for Congress or any of our other conferences this year, visit www.edgarcayce.org. That's EDGARCAYCE.org. Click on events and then click on conferences. We hope to see you all in Virginia Beach. I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in this week and end with a thought for the day from the Edgar Cayce readings. The thought for the day today is from reading 1183-3, and it reads, "Never so act in any manner, in any inclination, that there may ever be an experience of regret within yourself. Let the moves and the discourteousness, the unkindness, all come from the other. Better to be abased and to have the peace within. Act ever in the way that you would like to be acted toward. No matter what others say or even do, do as you would be done by. And then the peace that has been promised is indeed your own." I hope this quote from the reading inspires you this week to make your inner and outer worlds a better place. I'm your host, Brenton Bickerstaff, and I want to thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful, smile-filled week.